Folks, welcome to the KRS Molecular Minute Podcast. It's your host, Shadi Nabhan. I am the chairman of the Precision Oncology Alliance at KRS Life Sciences. The Precision Oncology Alliance is the large collaborative network that combines many institutions from across the globe that collaborate together on big data molecular profiling with the ultimate goal of improving the outcomes of all patients diagnosed with cancer. Many patients are diagnosed with cancer at a pediatric age. It is heartbreaking. I mean, frankly, anybody who is diagnosed with cancer, it's heartbreaking. But seeing kids diagnosed with cancer is more heartbreaking. And I knew that I could never be a pediatric hematologist oncologist myself. However, I am hosting an amazing pediatric hematologist oncologist, Dr. Giselle Scholler, who is board certified in pediatric hematology oncology. She is known all around the world for groundbreaking research. She specializes in pediatric solid tumors with a focus on neuroblastoma. She's the director of the Isabella Santos Foundation Rare and Solid Tumor Program at the Levine Children's and the professor of pediatric and principal investigator of the Scholler Pediatric Oncology Research Laboratory at Levine Children's Hospital. She's also the chair of the Beat Childhood Cancer Consortium, the BCC Consortium. It's a consortium that at the Precision Oncology Alliance we are working with, and we are helping to support their research efforts. I have invited Giselle, Dr. Scholler, to join me on the KRS Molecular Minute podcast to discuss trends in managing pediatric hematology oncology cancers in a way that we understand how molecular profiling, genomic profiling intersect with clinical care, what has changed. And this is an episode, folks, that you just simply do not want to miss. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues to listen to this episode. I'm very grateful for Dr. Giselle Scholler to join me on the KRS Molecular Minute podcast. Dr. Scholler, welcome to the show. Appreciate you taking time off a busy schedule that you have. And before we delve into the few questions I have for you, just a little bit of a background about you so our listeners know who you are and what you do day in and day out.
Sure. My name is Giselle Scholler. I'm a pediatric oncologist. I see children with all different pediatric cancers. I am chair of the Beat Childhood Cancer Research Consortium, which is a consortium of 54 hospitals that collaborate with us to treat children with cancer with new and advanced therapies and with a huge focus on precision medicine.
So for adult hematology oncology, we do 3 years of internal medicine and then we do 3 years of hem-onc. In pediatric oncology, you do pediatric residency and then you do hem-onc. Is that how it goes?
Same thing. Yep.
What got you interested in that? I recall I could not bear seeing a child with any illness. I'm not going to lie. So it takes really a special person to help kids in cancer. Any story behind what got you interested in the field?
Sure. When I was a medical student first and then as a pediatric resident, as a medical student, I did a rotation in peds hem-onc, and that month solidified for me that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. The patients that I met and the parents that I met made me want to help those families. It was incredibly meaningful. I feel like when a family has a child diagnosed with cancer, everything changes. What's important in life, or what we thought was important, is not really important. What's important is the family and their child and curing that child, and that passion to make a difference led me in the area of peds oncology, and then the cancer biology behind that, trying to understand how a cell could go so wrong and what's happening in that cell and how we can treat that and get rid of that. And I think especially now, you know, coming all the way forward to genomic medicine, it has brought that link together. But really, it was the heart of the families and the children that I wanted to be able to help them.
And it's interesting, in pediatric oncology, I mean, the child hasn't had a chance to, you know, to be exposed to a lot of things in the environment or things that we sometimes think about that cause certain somatic mutations. And
Correct.
So it's really fascinating, and I appreciate that you're doing the amazing work that you're doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's very different than the adult cancers, which are more carcinomas that have been caused by environmental changes or smoking or other things, whereas in pediatric cancers are more blastomas, like neuroblastoma, medulloblastoma. It's during the development of the child, cells are dividing rapidly, and a change can happen that causes a cancer. So we see the nervous system tumors when the nervous system is developing in children young, under 5 years of age, the leukemias, you know, when the child's immune system is developing between 5 and 10, and we see our bone cancers happen after age 10 and usually 13 during the growth spurt. And we see, you know, teenagers with their bone cancers. And so I think a lot of families, you know, wonder, what did I do wrong? Did I expose my child to something? And it's not the parents' fault. You know, it's really the nervous system or the different systems are developing at different times. So very different than adult cancers. Yeah.
And Giselle, in adult hematology and oncology, folks are a little bit super specialized. Like, I mean, I've told you I did lymphoid malignancies and GU. Some people do GI, some people do breast. In ped hemonc, is there such a trend as well?
There is more and more. So there's the leukemia, lymphoma, the liquid tumors, and then there's solid tumors generally, and then brain tumors are the main three areas. So it's not quite as super specialized as like adults where it's breast cancer only. So I'm the director of the solid tumor program here. So we see all solid tumors, but I still see patients with brain tumors too sometimes.
So, you know, the few things that I want to make sure that we understand as listening to an expert like yourself, in pediatric oncology, what is the trend of using molecular profiling? I mean, maybe take us through, I don't know, you have initial diagnosis are, and we're not talking clinical trials, we're talking real world and clinical practice. Mm-hmm. How are you bringing the advances in molecular technology into pediatric patients?
Yeah, I mean, I would say over the last 5 years, it's changed dramatically in terms of even just a few years ago, there were panels, foundation, you know, certain panels that 60 drugs, 600 drugs panels that we were using at initial diagnosis, but not in all cancers. In terms of just general, most patients don't have genomic testing done at diagnosis, or we send to the children's oncology group for specific fusions for, you know, Ewing sarcoma or certain things. But I would say, especially over the last 5 years, that the use of genomic information has increased dramatically here at our center. Now, every child at diagnosis and at every relapse, we send for whole exome sequencing, whole transcriptome sequencing. So we want a full picture of the patient's cancer right at diagnosis to better understand how to treat them.
Would you say that, let's say we think outside of your institution, would you say that there is a trend towards sequencing most pediatric patients in the front line, or most pediatric oncologists do it mainly in relapse setting?
I would say most do it in relapse. And I would say at frontline, high-risk patients or patients that are, we know, have a low chance of survival at diagnosis as well. And I would say most of the large centers across the U.S. are doing genomic sequencing now, either panels or all the way through whole genome. But it is something that is brought up at every meeting.
You know, I've learned that a lot of listeners like just examples. Is there any example that you might share with folks where 5-6 years ago, you would have been okay with a narrow panel, for example, but now you really feel because of therapy or investigation that really that broader panel is helping you more?
Sure. I mean, we have definitely patients and cases that I can share. I think that as an example, we published a case of a little girl with a brain tumor who had a very aggressive brain tumor, a choroid plexus carcinoma. At 9 months of age, had the tumor resected, received chemotherapy for a year, standard treatment. She relapsed 9 months off treatment, and she went on to get relapse therapies that were pretty standard for another year, inpatient in the hospital. She didn't respond to any of her just the standard relapsed treatments for a year, and spent a lot of time in the hospital. At that point, she had two tumors in her head at that point. So we offered to do, one of the tumors was resectable. The other was not. and we could do genomic sequencing. And so we did genomic sequencing, had a molecular tumor board looking at the whole transcriptome, whole exome sequencing. And the difference between the two, for I'm not sure all the listeners are aware, but the DNA and then the RNA. And in pediatric cancers, we don't see a lot in the DNA, which a lot of the panels are DNA. But the RNA is what's transcribed from the DNA. And from that RNA, we can look at different pathways that are active in the patient's cancer. So working with our bioinformaticians and our pharmacists, we have a molecular tumor board where the physicians, the bioinformaticians, and pharmacists work together to say, okay, these are the active pathways. What drugs might target those pathways? So for this patient, at this point after the year, she was either going to go home on hospice, or we could try and look at the genomics and see the family only wanted to have oral medications and be at home with their child. From the molecular tumor board, we were able to identify 4 drugs that she could take orally at home that appeared that they would target her cancer. She stayed on that treatment for 2.5 years. The tumor that was remaining was basically 2-millimeter scar. And she is now, I think, 5 years, or no, sorry, she's 5 years old. So a few years off treatment now, and the tumor has not recurred. And so the difference is, you know, just throwing chemotherapy wasn't helpful for her, but looking at the tumor, understanding what was causing the tumor to grow and targeting those specific pathways allowed the tumor to regress. She was never admitted to the hospital again, and, you know, is doing well. And so that's where we need to go in terms of not necessarily just, you know, trying to use the biology to understand the patient's tumor.
This is an amazing story. This is a child who was going to go to hospice, and she is now alive and well.
Yeah, and in school.
If somebody is listening to this and they're not really having goosebumps, I don't know. This is really amazing. I always say, Giselle, that, you may treat 1,000 patients and not cure 999, that one person that you cure makes it worth every single thing that you've done.
Absolutely. You know?
Tell me about BCC. This is fascinating to me. I mean, the ability of having 50 plus hospitals to collaborate on anything. Frankly, 10 hospitals. Let me back up a little bit. The ability to have like 2 hospitals collaborate on anything is amazing. You've got 50 plus. Can you share, like, how did this start? And I mean, it fascinates me since I started to learn more about the BCC.
Yeah, no, we started back when I was at the University of Vermont, and we had one drug that we looked like was going to be effective in a patient. It was actually a serendipitous. We had a patient that actually acquired a disease, Chagas disease, from a blood transfusion, which is a parasitic disease. Yeah. It was a girl with neuroblastoma. When we started to treat her with the drug for Chagas disease, her neuroblastoma went into remission. And so we did some preclinical work, and this drug has neurotoxicity, which is made why. And then some families became interested in accessing that for their children. And we needed to put together a clinical trial, and we received donations from the families. The families of children with cancer are absolutely incredible and have really funded and made BCC possible. And so it's really with the motivation from the families we need to do better for our patients. They funded the first trial and then into the second trial. And then other hospitals who were sending patients to us asked if they could participate in our trial. And it's really just been a group of pediatric oncologists that really care about their patients and want to work together that have come together with a group of parents who have had kids that have benefited from the research or want to make access to more kids so that kids can, you know, as we grow the consortium, families don't all have to come to my center to get the care. We're trying to get our trials out all across the country so kids can stay home, they can be with their families and their support networks and be treated there. So we're very fortunate to have the funding from the family foundations. There's the Beat Childhood Cancer Research Consortium, which is us, and then there's the Beat Childhood Cancer Foundation that raises the funds to make these trials, make the genomic sequencing available to the patients. And it's been just a great collaboration with a lot of people that have a lot of heart and want to see these kids survive.
It's amazing. And I mean, again, the share, it just goes to show you and to show listeners that you just, one hand just can't clap alone. You just have to have the like-minded people. And I could imagine that it's not always easy to go through the politics of each hospital institution, things like that. But when there's a will, there's a way. There's a trend in adult hematology oncology to look at tumor agnostic biomarkers. And sometimes there are drugs that work against this. Is there a similar trend in pediatrics?
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely focused on, you know, tumor agnostic treatments. And biomarkers, we are collecting blood samples for our patients on the studies as well, and trying to follow over time and see if there are other biomarkers that we can follow to look for response or outcomes or potential treatment. But we are definitely taking a tumor agnostic approach in our genomic medicine. You know, we can look at the sequencing, and we're not trying to treat a patient based on the name of their disease, but trying to treat a patient based on the genomics of their disease.
Yeah. I know anything super, I mean, you have, usually you probably go to, I learned there's the ASPHO meeting, the American Society of Pediatrics, and there's another meeting, for pediatrics. I'm blanking on the name.
SIAP.
Is there anything exciting we should expect? Whatever you can share. I know some of the data are usually embargoed for a while, but anything that you're looking for at these meetings that, we should be on the alert for?
You know, in regards to the genomic sequencing, I don't have anything right now that I can share necessarily, but I think there's just so many advances. I think one of the areas is looking at the clonal evolution of tumors. I think we're definitely seeing that, you know, in terms of insurances and such, tumors do change over time, and really sequencing, not just at diagnosis, but when they relapse and then when they relapse again, looking at the clonal evolution of tumors and the change in treatment and really targeting those different clones that grow out. It's an important piece that is really evolving right now.
Really, my last couple of questions, any particular research project or a trial that you are specifically running or leading that you would like to share with listeners that are of interest to you?
Sure. I mean, one of our really exciting studies that we're working now is not just looking at precision medicine, but precision immunotherapy as well. And I think the genomics of the tumor can also help us to train the immune system to fight the cancer. So in our study, as we do a biopsy of a patient's tumor, we also do apheresis of their white cells. We are looking at the genomics to begin precision medicine, what drugs might target, but also taking the mRNA of the patient's tumor, injecting it into their patient's dendritic cells, the cells that present antigens to the immune system, and creating a personalized vaccine for the patient to vaccinate the patients. And then as we give the vaccines, so once that is created, we have the patient's own white cells that have been activated against their own tumor, and we give those back as an injection. After two vaccines, then our theory is that the immune system has then become activated against the patient's tumor. So what we want to do is then we harvest and do another leukapheresis or harvest the white cells again. And what we're really interested in the activated T cells. So the patient's own T cells that have been activated against their own cancer. And those are grown up. And we're collaborating with Dr. Dwayne Mitchell from the University of Florida and his lab to create product that's the patient's own activated T cells. Once those are grown up into a large amount, because patients with cancer will make their immune system will get activated against their cancer, but not in large numbers enough in the body to truly fight the cancer. But if we can do it outside of the body, you really increase the number of T cells that are made, then we see the patient again, we give them some chemo to suppress their T regulatory cells or the cells in their immune system that suppress their immune system. And then we can give them an IV infusion of their own activated T cells to go and really have it train their immune system to fight their cancer. And this is something that Dr. Dwayne Mitchell has been doing in adult glioblastoma, and now we're bringing it into pediatrics. So I'm really excited about less toxic therapies for our kids. And if we can do precision therapy with precision immunotherapy, that's the trial that I'm most excited about at this point.
It's amazing. And honestly, if 10 years ago or 15 years ago, somebody was mentioning that, this would be like science fiction, like, oh, come on, like you can. and I'm glad to see this progress. My last question, what do you do for fun?
I was just skiing in Colorado last week. I love skiing.
Excellent.
And spending time with my girls as much as possible.
Well, Giselle, Dr. Scholler, thank you so much for spending time on the Caris Molecular Minute. I know you have a very busy schedule, but being with us is I'm very grateful, and I'm sure our listeners are as grateful.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Caris Molecular Minute podcast. This is your host, Dr. Shadi Nabhan, Chairman of the Precision Oncology Alliance at Caris Life Sciences. Do not forget to subscribe, rate the podcast, let your friends and colleagues know about it. Until next time, take care.